From Buck Studio at Wisconsin Public Radio, this is Zorba Pastor on Your Health. I'm Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor, here to talk with you about what's new in healthy living, share some down-to-earth advice, and great lifestyle tips to help you get the most out of life. If you have a question for Zorba, here's the number to call, 800-462-7413. Zorba, along with the call, some interesting topics to talk over.
Yes. Does an apple a day keep the doctor away?
Okay.
And we'll talk about actually where that came from and whether or not it is true, according to an article which was published in JAMA.
And?
Breastfeeding. The importance of breastfeeding. It's very important. And this is a study that has gone on for many, many, many years, published in the journal Lancet, that talks about breastfeeding and its importance in development.
Mm-hmm. And a recipe.
Mango and black rice salad. Something good this time of year. I've been to like mangoes. Do you like mangoes?
I do.
Yeah, I like mangoes.
It sounds like an interesting combination.
It is. It is.
Yeah.
It is.
800-462-7413. Let's take our first call, Zorba. A listener with us now in Buffalo, New York. Hi.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
I am calling about something with my husband.
Mm-hmm.
He had an attack at work where he felt very lightheaded, and his pulse was extremely rapid, and he was having difficulty breathing. And they took him to the hospital where they were unable to determine any issues with him. So then they sent him to a cardiologist, and he wore the heart monitor for a month. And that didn't show anything as well. And then he started having the irregular heartbeats again, almost like you hear it, you know, thump, thump, and then thump, thump, like kind of skip. And he's had that for years very mildly, but this was very different from what he's had for the last, I don't know, 30 years. And so he went to the general practitioner, and he was given a beta blocker. So shortly after starting on the beta blocker, his heartbeats became more irregular. They seemed harder.
Oh.
He had a shortness of breath, especially when he was exerting at work.
What kind of work does he do?
He's a machine repairman.
So it's a physical job.
At times it is physical.
Uh-huh.
But even it was difficult for him to exercise.
Because of shortness of breath?
Shortness of breath and actually mild dizziness.
Oh, uh-huh. It's a lot of stuff. So the beta blocker didn't work. It made things worse.
It seemed to. So his sister, who also, you know, their father had a heart condition and had a pacemaker in his 50s. And so him and his sisters all have mild, you know, they used to say it was, I forget what the name was. But you know that it was fine. It was just this little irregular heartbeat, but it was nothing that was serious.
Sure. So first of all, Dad had a pacer in his 50s. That's a young age. And so looking to see whether or not he has a cardiac irregularity or whether or not he's got a block is very important. And they do that with the 24-hour meter called the Holter monitor. You know, you're looking to see whether or not there's a heart block, certain irregular heartbeats that'll pick up there. It's pretty sensitive. It's not perfect by any means. So when that failed to pick it up, they did the right thing. They did an event monitor. You wear this. You know, you wear these electrodes on your chest, and every time you feel something, you push a button because it's continuously recording. But when you push the button, it goes into the permanent recording mode. They look back, and they didn't catch it. So during that month, it didn't happen. You know, it actually didn't occur, and that was, you know, unfortunate. Now, PVCs, premature ventricular contractions, we don't give beta blockers for that. But something called PACs, premature atrial contractions, sometimes beta blockers will help, but they lower blood pressure, they can make you more fatigued, they definitely have side effects, they can interfere with ejaculation. So for guys, that can be a big issue. But they're very good drugs. If that doesn't work, I certainly would go off of it. But the real issue is your husband is having symptoms of shortness of breath. That's the most worrisome thing, because you can have a regular heartbeat and it's not dangerous. In fact, Looking back years ago, we used to treat irregular heartbeats with a drug called quinidine until a long-term study showed we were killing people with the drug to stop irregular heartbeats. Then we used a drug called Norpace, and then we found out we were killing people with the drug because we were giving it for irregular heartbeats. So basically 20 years ago, we pulled back and said, hey, only certain irregular heartbeats should be treated. The others are actually benign. But the shortness of breath, has he been on a treadmill?
Yes, he has. And actually, yeah, in relation to it, you know, he had to have a colonoscopy, and so he went off of all his meds right before.
Yeah.
And because he was kind of curious. Mm-hmm. And so since he's gone off the beta blocker, he's felt better.
Oh, I would stay off the beta blocker. If he's felt better off the beta blocker, I would go off of it. From what you told me, he doesn't need the beta blocker and, you know, wasn't given by a cardiologist. I would go off of it. I wouldn't go back. If I were him, I would not go back on the beta blocker. What I think you should do is this. Number one, he needs an echo to look at the chambers of the heart. He needs a treadmill, which he's had up to date. He's had these Holter monitors, and if things are fine, then he needs to start conditioning himself. That's what I would do. I would look at all of his meds. That's what I would look at, a med review, because meds can cause side effects. I would look at other things such as, does he like his job? Is he depressed? You know, is this depression? I would look above the shoulders, as we say, to see if there are other symptoms, as well as in the heart. I'd look at the heart and the heart, basically.
Okay.
But he needs to look at all those things. Conditioning can be a big issue here. And also, I would stop all caffeine, all alcohol, all inebriants, and I would stop that for a month to see if that's an issue. And he needs to see sort of a captain of the whole thing to be able to put this together. But the beta blocker, do not restart it. Good luck.
Okay, thank you so much.
You're
sure,
welcome.
We appreciate the call at 800-462-7413.
You know, sometimes it's not one thing that causes shortness of breath. It's 5 or 10 things. And for this gentleman, it's looking at all those things because it's clearly multifactorial.
Mm-hmm. 800-462-7413 is the number to call if you have a question for Zorba. As we get back to the phones now, Zorba, with a listener in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
You bet. How can we help?
My question is about a condition called brain fog. I've heard that it's a condition where mentally you're not firing on all cylinders the way you used to. And I was just curious, is this because of, say, poor diet, or does this naturally happen as a result of aging?
Okay, so let's look at, first of all, there's some days that we're more on task than others. I know that. You know, some days we sleep better. Mm-hmm. The caffeine works better for me. For instance, when I do the show, sometimes I exercise before the show. That always clears my mind. I'm always much more with it when I exercise, but I am basically a lazy person when it comes to exercise, and I don't like to do it.
Come on, you exercise all the time.
Yeah, but I do it because I force myself to do it. I'm not a natural exerciser. There's some people who like exercise. Don't get me wrong. I like to hike and I like to bike and do things. But going to
the gym,
that's true. But anyway, the days that, thank you, Tom. You know what? This is compliment day. Thank you very much. But when I exercise, I feel better. It clears my mind. So what do you do for exercise?
I've been starting to run.
Starting to run means?
A mile.
What is starting to run means? That means you haven't been running?
I run off and on, but I'm trying to get it into it to make it a regular habit.
Mm-hmm. Okay. How much do you drink? How about alcohol or smoke weed?
None, actually. I drink once in a blue moon, mm-hmm. and I don't even smoke regular cigarettes.
Mm-hmm. Okay, because those are things that can actually induce things like that. So one of the things, as I say, get rid of inebriants. The other thing is to exercise. The third thing is sleep. So how much sleep do you get?
Sometimes 7-8 hours. Mm-hmm. Sometimes less than that.
Less than that. Sleep can be a factor. There are a few other things that work out. Before I look at ADD, which can also be for adults, you know, attention deficit disorder. Do you think you're depressed?
I would not rule that out.
Okay. Depression can cause people to feel that they're not on task. It's not a minor issue. It's a major issue. So if you feel you have brain fog and you wonder if you're depressed, I would recommend that you discuss it with a doctor, your primary care provider, another clinician. There are excellent antidepressants. One of the ones we often use is called bupropion, and the reason is sometimes it keeps people on task more. It's different from the SSRIs like Prozac, which also work well. I would take a depression screen score. You can get them online. The Hamilton D is a longer one, the PHQ-9. But if you say you wouldn't rule out depression, you want to rule that out. Because at the age of 26, I wouldn't say age is why you're not firing on all those cylinders. You know, you're a third of the age of Tom, and he fires on all cylinders every day.
Hey, give away my age.
But anyway, that's what I would recommend. I would look into other things. Inebriants, of course, we talked about with an issue, but that's what I would look at. And I would do a trial. I tell people, look, if you don't know if you're depressed or not, and if you wonder it plays a role, give yourself a 3-month trial on antidepressants. See what they do. People who benefit from them often say, I feel normal. They don't say anything else. They are not drugs that are habitual. You don't have to necessarily take it for the rest of your life.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Appreciate the call.
Thank you.
800-462-7413.
So brain fog is not a real, if you will, it's not a diagnosis. It's sort of a common term that's used for people to say, I just don't feel like things are right. And it can be caused by so many different things that are going on in your life. Looking at your lifestyle, looking at your mental health are important ways to look at it, and looking at your general fitness.
800-462-7413, the toll-free number. And Zorba, does an apple a day keep the doctor?
Well, it's very interesting. So, first of all, do you know where that comes from?
What do you mean, comes from?
It comes from the early 1900s when the Women's Christian Temperance League was chopping down apple trees. And do you know why they were chopping down apple trees? Because there really was a Johnny Appleseed, that wasn't his name, who really was a nurseryman.
Did they use apples to make booze?
Or? Hard cider.
Yeah,
when people had orchards in the 1800s, you got it. It was the gift of alcohol. It was not the gift of good health. That's exactly right.
Chop down an apple tree to keep people from drinking?
Right. Absolutely. Hard cider was the cheapest thing. It wasn't apple as good. And so what happened was the apple orchard people, you know, imagine these women in these long dresses coming down and chopping down apple trees. Do you have the image? Susan B. Anthony. It wasn't her. Yeah. But it was other, you know, chopping it down. I think they probably were. But they did. They were actually chopping down apple trees and attacking orchards. So they had to come up with a slogan. And they changed the concept of an apple. And they came up with the slogan, an apple a day will keep the doctor away.
Yeah.
And also at that time, people thought that constipation caused tremendous disease. It caused vapors in the body, and they thought it caused cancer.
Yeah.
And basically, constipation to a 60-year-old is like sex to a 16-year-old. They think about it all the time.
Yeah.
And if people didn't have that daily bowel movement, they thought they would explode. I mean, there was really a lot of issues. So they hit it on constipation, and they hit it on apples really are not alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
Now, getting on to the topic.
Yes.
At hand, I had to give you some background. An apple a day does not keep the doctor away, according to this, because this particular study looked at apples mm-hmm. and whether or not this was published in JAMA Internal Medicine,
okay.
and they looked at consumers of apples. This is it wasn't a double-blind study, but they were looking at approximately 9,000 people who consumed apples, who didn't consume apples, mm-hmm. what was their cholesterol, and so on. And they found out that just as many doctor visits were people who consumed an apple a day and people did not. By the way, there were not a lot of people who consumed an apple a day. It was probably about 10 to 20%. However, they found out that people who consumed a daily apple did not get as many prescription drugs.
Oh.
So an apple a day
it's
might...
It's sort of the same thing, then. But obviously, the slogan means an apple a day is pretty good for you.
That's right. That's what it means. But it should be an apple a day keeps the pharmacist away.
That's interesting stuff.
It's very interesting.
800-462-7413, our number, and a Beresford, South Dakota listener joins in next. Hi.
Hi. Appreciate your show.
Sure. How can we help?
Well, I'm an old codger now, and I try to take care of my health. The biggies I worry about somewhat are heart attack and stroke and cancer. And now the latest one that I'm probably most concerned about is Alzheimer's. I think it'd be a terrible thing to start losing your mind and know that you're losing your mind. So I've listened to some lectures and I've read some books. I've gone gluten-free and I tried to cut my sugar all the way back, but I seem to be getting contradictory advice. They contend, the people that I've listened to, that it's kind of backwards, that we need more fat in the diet and less carbohydrates.
Well, let me tell you about Alzheimer's, because my mom died of Alzheimer's in 1981, a long time ago. She got it at 61, and she died at 67, 68. So I keep up to date on Alzheimer's because I don't want to get it. So first of all, there is no diet that we know of that's going to keep away Alzheimer's. But let's look at dementia together. Half of all dementia is Alzheimer's, and the other half is not Alzheimer's due to other things. Parkinson's disease, for example, can cause dementia. But the other half is mostly caused by cardiovascular disease. Small vessels in the brain, little strokes. Blood, you know, it used to be the pipes aren't working, so you don't get as much blood into certain parts of the brain. And in fact, that's really true. So if we look at that part that we can influence, blood pressure under control, not having too much alcohol, a drink a day is okay, maybe two for guys, not more than that. Cardiovascular health, which means exercise, eating right, follow any Mediterranean diet. The Mediterranean diet is the king of diets. All the other diets, in my mind, you can throw them out. They're not, you know, you can be gluten-free if gluten bothers you. But other than that, the Mediterranean diet is the king of diets because it has proven cardiovascular health with a major study 2 years ago. 7,000 people followed for 7 years, major difference. So Mediterranean diet is really the way to go. Now, Alzheimer's, we don't know what causes it. Early Alzheimer's is genetic, so I worried about my mom until I passed the age that she had it, and then I stopped worrying. We also know the mind is like a muscle. Use it or lose it. So there are excellent computer things, you know, online that you can do. Luminosity is one. I don't do it, but people do it, and they say it helps them. If you like word puzzles, that's great. I hate word puzzles. Mm-hmm. Last time I did a crossword puzzle was in 1962 because I hate it. I don't spell. On the other hand, I keep my mind going. That's really important. Mm-hmm. And do not restrict your diet. Do a Mediterranean diet that is robust, delicious, and healthy. And take the other diets, and my mind is kick them out. They don't work.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
You're
welcome.
Thank
you. Appreciate the call. And before we take a break, Zorba, time again to hear from our favorite nitpickers and backseat drivers, the Grammar Police. A listener named Bob from Billings, Montana, sent us this email. Dear Dr. Zorba, on a recent show, you referred to sauerkraut as very unique. Unique means like nothing else or one of a kind. There are no levels of unique. Keep up the good work.
No levels of unique. There are no levels of unique. Well, I recommend reading The Language of Food. It's an excellent book, and it talks about how in menus and in restaurants, how they vary the language to make something better, such as made with real cream, because there's no such thing as real cream. There's cream, and there's phony cream. So I stand by very unique, but I agree that it's very interesting that they brought that
I had used to say that, too.
Very unique.
You know, I used to talk on the radio
lot. Oh, I know.
And one day I got off of my radio program shift, walked out the door, and there was my boss standing there saying, "You can't say this is more unique than something else."
Oh, really?
There's only unique. It's either unique or it's not unique.
Oh, gosh.
And you know what I said?
What?
I can't say it on the radio. Okay, so How do you catch a unique grammatical error? Unique up on it.
Oh, gosh. That's at ZorbaPastor.org. Or post it on Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet at Dr. Zorba.
A recipe coming up next. After that, some more of your calls. We have our medical myth buster coming up. Another interesting piece of research coming up, too. All right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. That number again, if you have a question for Zorba, is 800-462-7413. But Zorba, before our next call, our recipe for mango and black rice salad.
Now, do you like mangoes?
Yeah, I do.
You love it. And do you like black rice?
Yeah, I do.
Yeah. Have you eaten black rice?
Oh, sure.
Oh, in Asian restaurants.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's exactly
yeah.
it. It's kind of a purpley-looking rice. I first came into contact with black rice when I was in Bali back in the day. After my wife and I were first married, we went on a trip around the world for a year. We sort of, you know, tramped around the world. We were in Bali, and there they had black rice pudding, which is delicious. It's made with rice. It's hot. It's made with sugar cane, and it's absolutely delicious. And it's wonderful. It's high in nutritional value. It's a good source of iron, vitamin E, antioxidants. The hull, of course, the black rice itself has the highest level of certain antioxidants found in food. It's very, very good.
You know what? It's almost like you shouldn't eat white rice anymore.
White
rice is kind of boring.
Well, it is.
There are so many other interesting rices.
Oh, that's exactly right. And the husks have been taken out. And black rice is used here. It's great.
Okay.
So you start out with two oranges.
Two oranges?
1/4 cup of fresh lime juice. Do not use reconstituted. It does not taste the same. It is a poor, poor proxy for real lime juice.
1/4 cup of lime juice.
2 tablespoonfuls of vegetable oil. I would use canola oil.
Mm-hmm. 2 big tea vegetable oil.
1 tablespoonful of fish sauce. Fish sauce, by the way, is a great, robust way to add a salty flavor to anything you want.
Mm-hmm. 1 big tea fish sauce.
2 cups of black rice.
2 cups of black rice.
Now, where do you buy your black rice, Tom? Yeah, that is quite a joke. You can get it.
I walk in the door and order it.
You can get it. You can get it in Asian grocery stores. You liked that, didn't you?
Yes.
You liked it. 2 mangoes, peel, pitted, and cut into 1/2-inch cubes.
2 mangoes, like he said.
Peeled and pitted. Now, I'll tell you something interesting. I got a mango pitter once. Oh. I got it, and I've used it. Do you ever use, when you're cutting apples, there's a little thing that has a circle. It looks like a star.
I know that takes the core out.
Oh, it takes the core out. There's one for mangoes.
I didn't know that.
And it has a different center because the pit in the middle of a mango is more oblong shape.
Wow.
And it works really well.
And it works well?
Yeah, it works very well. So I would use that. You've got to get it lined up exactly right. 1 cup of fresh cilantro leaves. And if you don't like cilantro, you can leave that out. Do you like cilantro?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's some people who don't like cilantro.
Well, sure.
I mean,
there are people who don't like everything.
Yeah, there are people who don't like everything. That's exactly right. I wonder if they have something in common with the people who don't like cilantro.
Yeah.
There are people who don't like our show. They don't listen to our show.
Go away.
Yeah, they're the ones who don't
I've
like...
I've never run into
them. That's right. I've never run into people who don't
come
like
up
this
to me
show.
And said, what?
You know what? I've never had anyone stop me on the street and say, I don't like your show.
Yeah.
I hate it. And then walk
I listen
away.
All
That's
the time.
Happened.
I can't stand it.
I can't stand it. It has not happened.
Right.
You know, and then ask them. Next time that happens, ask them if they like cilantro.
Okay.
And see whether or not it makes a difference. 1 cup of finely chopped red onions.
1 cup of finely chopped red onions.
1/2 cup of unsalted dry roasted peanuts.
1/2 cup of unsalted dry roasted peanuts.
You know, I haven't had anybody say, I can't stand your show. I'm sorry, I'm stuck on that. Okay. Back to work.
Yeah.
6 thinly sliced scallions.
6 thinly sliced scallions.
2 jalapeno peppers, seeded and minced.
2 jalapeno peppers, seeded and minced.
And once again, if you don't like jalapeno peppers, shut off the radio and don't listen to the show.
Okay.
Okay.
Don't do that.
I'll get back to it. Yeah. Okay. Remove the peel and white pith from the oranges. Okay. You got to cut off the oranges and, you know, take the peel off and that mm-hmm. stuff in between. Mm-hmm. Working over a medium bowl to catch the juices, use a sharp knife, cut between the membranes. Really, basically, you're putting orange segments in the bowl. Mm-hmm. And frankly, an easier way would be to buy the cuties or, you know, the little clementines because they don't have much pith in them at all. Mandarin oranges will work great, but any kind of an orange. I would use mandarin oranges for this because mm-hmm. they've got lots of juice, very little pith.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder where the name pith comes from. Someone will tell us. Someone will tell us. That's right. Squeeze. Anyway, you want to get the juices over the bowl and make sure that you strain the juices through fine mesh sheath into the bowl. Reserve the orange segments. Now, add 1/4 cup of lime juice and fish sauce to the bowl with the orange juice, the fresh stuff. Mix it to blend it. Set it aside. And then now you're going to make the rice. Bring the rice 2 3/4 cups of water to a boil in a large saucepan. Season with a little bit of salt. Cover and make sure it's basically cooked for about 25 minutes. So cook the rice as it is. If you buy it in a package, pay attention to the package because some black rice uses more than others, just like brown rice.
Mm-hmm.
But it takes 30 minutes to cook. Remove the pan from the heat. Let it stand for 15 minutes. Spread the rice out on a baking sheet. Drizzle with this dressing, basically, which is lime juice, fish oil, and orange juice. You're going to drizzle it with that dressing. Then let it cool. Peel the mangoes, put those peeled mangoes right on top of it, add the rice and toss. So basically, you're going to have some mango, you're going to have some black rice, you're going to have a little salty taste from the fish sauce. If you need a little more salt, put a little bit more rice, add more lime juice, and it's delicious. So think about it. You've got the sweetness of orange, the tartness of lime juice, the black rice that is going to give you body and a little bit of texture, the sweetness of mango. How delicious is that?
Yeah, it sounds great.
I mean, it's really a wonderful, wonderful cold dish to have on the hot summer days that we're going to have coming down the line, right? We're going to have hot summer days coming down the line.
And you can find this on the web?
You can find it on the web at ZorbaPastor.org. You will be able to see photos of Tom. You can look at our past recipes. Wonderful. ZorbaPastor.org. You can find us on Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet at Dr. Zorba, Dr. Zorba. Come and follow me with my tweets.
Back to the phone, Zorba. A listener now in La Crosse, Wisconsin. Hi.
Hi, Zorba. I appreciate your good column, your good radio shows and information.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
I am a cancer patient. I have been for pancreatic cancer for 9 years. And
that is long. 9 years for pancreatic cancer.
Yeah.
Congratulations. You've survived. You know, maybe there are 3% of the people, 97% of the people, I bet, who have pancreatic cancer are dead by that time. Mm. Easily.
Yeah, right on. Easily. My oncologist says that's amazing.
Right.
Anyway,
right.
I've had all the normal treatments, the Whipple operation, chemo, radiation, et cetera, here in La Crosse at a very fine healthcare center. And then after that, shortly after that, 9 years ago, I went on a clinical trial into a prestigious medical facility out in Baltimore.
Mm-hmm. You assume went to Johns Hopkins?
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah. Yeah, you can mention names.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I
didn't.
Yeah, you can mention it.
And Johns Hopkins.
Besides, if you said Baltimore, prestigious institution, anyone who knows anything about institutions would say it's at Johns Hopkins, you know.
Yeah, so, of course. They're one of the top of the world.
Yep.
Anyway, they had this clinical trial for pancreatic cancer, which I've been in for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
One of the requirements, though, I go semi-annually, so one of the requirements each of those times that I go is a CT scan plus blood work and all the other.
Of course,
things.
Of course.
But this means that I have had 18 CT scans over these 9 years, and I'm getting very concerned about the amount of radiation, particularly when I know that those CTs maybe have upwards of 100 times the radiation as a X-ray. So I'm wondering about what your take on, because I'm considering dropping out of this study because of the CT scan.
Well, let's talk about a couple things. First of all, congratulations on surviving 9 years. Nobody does. I mean, that's an incredible amount of time to talk about. How old are you?
85.
So we worry about radiation in people who are 25, not 85. And the reason is young people are more likely to suffer the problems of radiation. We worry about it in five-year-olds, doing too much in five-year-olds, because radiation, the side effects of radiation often will take 25 or 30 years to actually develop. So although you do have a right to be concerned, you're not going to be around in 25 years. I mean, that much we know. I'm not telling you anything you don't know. So I'm not as concerned about radiation in an 85-year-old as I am about radiation in a 25-year-old. That's the first thing. The second thing is it's not 100 times. It's more. I don't know what the number is. I'd have to look at it. But if you live in Denver, Colorado, you get the equivalent, because you're a mile high, of about 20 chest x-rays worth of radiation a year. So let's say you're born in Denver, Colorado. You live there for 10 years. It's 200 x-rays. You live there for 20 years. It's 400 x-rays. In other words, it actually is quite a bit of radiation just because you're higher up in the mountain. There's less atmosphere. And so, and I might be wrong on that number 20. It might be the number 10 with new x-ray machines now that use less radiation. So that's one side. The other side is you're in a clinical trial and you've lasted 9 years. So they're looking at CT scans to see whether or not there's anything there. You can talk to the people who are running the trial and say, look, I'm concerned. I don't want to do two a year. I'm willing to do one a year. And quite often, that's a deviation from protocol, but they still want to follow you. They don't want to lose you because you're a survivor and you've been on there. And you may be able to get by with half the number of CT scans. But your information may be critical to saving other lives because you're a survivor. And so I think that should be part of your mix. You're 85. I think the risk of an 85-year-old with this, yes, there is a risk, but like I said, it's a small risk. But the information you're giving to help others may be worthwhile. And that's when you have to make that decision. There's something called informed consent. And the most important thing is you get informed and then you consent individually. And that's why you're part of the study in the first place, because you want to help other people, I assume.
Well, yes. And I had the hopes that it was going to be beneficial to me.
Oh, of course. And they will still, by the way, if you don't have CT scans, they're still going to want to follow you because you're 9 years out. So if you said, I don't want to have CT scans, chances are much more likely than not, they'll say, well, will you still come for visits twice a year? But they probably would get by with one CT. Hey, you're 9 years out.
No, they wouldn't. I tried that. Oh. I tried that.
Well,
they wouldn't drop it to one a year.
I think the radiation risk in an 85-year-old is minimal, but it's not zero.
All right. Okay.
Good luck to you.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Yeah, appreciate the call. At 800-462-7413. And before the break, Zorba, let's take a quick email question from a listener named Jackie. She writes, Dear Dr. Zorba, I am a female in my mid-30s. As long as I can remember, I've had random hiccups throughout the day. I have one or two hiccups at a time, and then they're gone. This happens about 40 times per day. They are loud and sometimes painful, and they come out of nowhere. They can be pretty loud in my office, and it doesn't seem to be triggered by eating or drinking anything. I am not on any medications, nor have I taken any over-the-counter meds for this. Any reason why this is happening?
Well, it's an irritation of something called the phrenic nerve. And it can produce major problems. I had a patient years ago who had intractable hiccups. He hiccuped all the time. And it wasn't just mildly disturbing. I mean, it interfered with his quality of life. Mm-hmm. There's some medications that are worthwhile. We used to give phenothiazine tranquilizers. Those are the tranquilizers that we give for people who are psychotic. Mm. And it actually worked quite well, but it had side effects because it affected the mind and the drugs had other problems. So we don't use those anymore. Mm-hmm. There are some medications that can stop that. There also are some things you can do in terms of your life that can stop it. No caffeine, no alcohol, an acid reducer such as omeprazole or Zantac or both that are over-the-counter medications mm-hmm. can make a difference. Looking at whether or not hot, anything kind of within the stomach can actually sometimes disturb the phrenic nerves. So hot coffee during the day can bother it. Cold water can bother it. There are a whole bunch of things. We'll put on our website, zorbapastor.org, some of the things that you can do to help prevent chronic hiccups. And if any of our listeners have tips, not how to just get rid of hiccups, we're talking about prevention of chronic hiccups. I would love to hear about them because they are a big issue for some people. And you can write us for that at zorbapastor.org and put in your 2 cents.
Mm-hmm. And if you have a question for the doc, send us that email
to zorbapastor.org or find us in Facebook.
Another interesting topic to talk about coming up next. More of your calls on our Medical Mythbuster, all right here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health from PRI, Public Radio International. Tom Clark with Family Doc Zorba Pastor here on Zorba Pastor on Your Health. Our number, if you have a question for Zorba, is 800-462-7413. But before our next call, Zorba, breastfeeding may have benefits decades later.
That's right. But before I tell you about the study, I do want to mention one thing.
Yeah.
Not every woman can breastfeed. I mean, and in fact, when I was a child, my mother could not breastfeed, and I had a wet nurse. That's what they were called. It was another woman who breastfed me because formula was not used for the most part. Mm-hmm. But for any woman who can breastfeed, this study shows that breastfeeding really counts. Now, we know there's a lot of short-term benefit from breastfeeding
right.
in terms of infections. Children who are breastfed babies have fewer ear infections, fewer throat infections because antibodies are transferred. We know that nurturing is important and bonding. But this is a very important study because it looks 30 years later. So in 1982, they started with 6,000 newborns. Okay, 6,000 newborns in 1982. They found 3,500 newborns 30 years later. Okay, so you got the 6,000 at the beginning. They were able to identify 3,500 newborns. Mm-hmm. They did a lot of, if you will, observation of what went on in the family. They looked at the mother's education, whether or not the mom smoked, whether or not the dad smoked, what was the family income. Because in America, we know that people with higher socioeconomic income breastfeed.
Sure.
It's not the poor people. It's the richer people who breastfeed. That affects IQ because they're often more educated. They looked at the birth weight of the baby. They looked whether or not the mom smoked during pregnancy. They looked at whether or not the mom drank during pregnancy. They took all of those groups, and they found out after they controlled for them that children who were breastfed for 12 months had higher IQ scores, had a higher level of education, and they had higher incomes than children who did not get breastfed for 1 year.
Whoa, that's and all those variables they control.
They control for it. Now, this is called an observational study.
Yeah.
So, in other words, we're looking back and we're looking generally. But I think, once again, it looks at the fact that there's a lot going on in breastfeeding. And it's not just the milk. It's what's going on when a mother nurtures the baby that seems to make a difference. Maybe it's the warmth. Maybe it's the milk. Maybe it's what's, you know, is what's happening. So it's clearly an issue of breastfeeding. If you have a newborn, breastfeed if you can for 1 year.
Yeah, and you say wealth and education, you're more likely to breastfeed if you're richer and better
educated.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Oh, totally ridiculous.
This is totally an information
ridiculous.
Problem.
Totally.
They aren't getting
that's
the information.
Exactly. And a lot of women go back to work, but they can breastfeed their baby when they come back for work.
Yeah.
They can actually put the milk in the refrigerator, put the milk in the freezer. But I think it once again shows that breast is best, and we're really on a 30-year quest to do this. This study shows that your child will be smarter if they're breastfed.
800-462-7413 is the number to call if you have a question for Zorba, as does a listener in Dubuque, Iowa. Hi.
Hello there. Thank you for taking my call today.
You bet. What's up?
Well, I have a child, my oldest child, and through his youth, he always had some facial tics, some involuntary facial movements, his eyes, eyebrows, nose, mouth, whatever. And mentioning it to our family doctor when he was young and doing research on the internet, the answer kept coming back that, oh, he'll grow out of it. And fast forward to today, he's 21 years old and graduating from college, and they haven't gone away. Mm-hmm. And I would say it's not, you know, they've never been debilitating or that obvious, maybe other than to myself and his mother. But clearly, right now, it's kind of narrowed down to eye blinking.
Mm-hmm.
There's certain times it occurs more than others. We're not around him as much because he's been in college for 4 years. But if he's reading or watching television or eating, you know, more events like that where he's not interacting with people so much, you'll notice it a lot. And I just wondered, you know, he's going to go out and interview for jobs. I don't know how that's going to be portrayed across the interview table. That's why I'm asking about it now. And one thing I want to say is I've never said anything to him about it. It's never been brought up. I don't know if he even realizes through his life that he's done it.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been worried about saying it because I don't want to make him more self-conscious about it, thinking it might make matters worse.
Sure. Well, first of all, he's 21. I think at 21, you've got an adult there, and I think you should say, you know, you're blinking a lot. I think you ought to bring it up and have a conversation. I think that's okay. And I think if you're aware of it and it's there, I think he's aware of it too. My guess is someone has said to him in his life, is there something wrong with your eye? Why are you blinking? So you've not carried on the discussion, but children are generally smart. And they're smarter than we adults, we parents think they are. So I would definitely bring it up and say, you know, I'm concerned about this. And there's some reasons behind it. He's obviously never seen a neurologist about this.
No.
Okay. I'd recommend a visit with a neurologist. Sometimes there are medications you can actually give to stop blinking. Also, sometimes if it's a voluntary blink, sometimes cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a type of therapy that can happen with a psychotherapist, people can control their blinks. In other words, they have the ability to actually realize it's there because it becomes a habit, if you will, and it becomes an involuntary habit. So there actually is some help for your son. He may have thought about it, but once again, he's your kid, and he may have not realized there's anything you can do about it. But there are treatments for this that can work. And I highly recommend that you encourage them to have it, because when people – there's a certain amount of blinking that's acceptable, and beyond that, people wonder if there's something wrong, or they misconstrue it as nervousness. Or it's just disconcerting to other people, and so they may involuntarily not be pleased with it. And he's been in college. I'm sure he's actually, whether or not he's discussed it or not, other people have noticed it. My guess is once you talk to him, he'll say, oh, yeah, Dad, I blink a lot. It's going to be my guess. And you can call back and let us know. But there definitely can be things that you can enter in with it, and I would recommend that you help him get some help. Neurologist? That would be my number one thing I would do.
Okay. We'll do that.
Thank you. He obviously has not grown out of it at this point.
No. No. And like I said, it's different times. I think if he's tired or stressed, you know, it might appear a little bit more.
Yeah. But sure. That may be it. He needs some help. So you're going to his graduation?
I plan on it.
That
I sure
be
will
great.
Be.
Well,
yeah.
Congratulations. Always nice
Thank
to,
you.
Always nice to have that. Congratulations.
Now he just needs to find a job.
Yes, and preferably a job with benefits.
Exactly. Right.
Well, take care. Good luck.
Okay, thank you.
You
we
are.
Appreciate the call. Thank you. And time now, Zorba, for our medical myth buster. Today's question is from a loyal Missouri listener, Bill. He writes, Dr. Pastor, thank you so much for an informative and fun show every week. I spend 50% of my time on the road. At home, I take two liquid supplements, glucosamine and a multivitamin. I know I could take these supplements in pill form, but I've read that liquids absorb much better in our systems than do pills, and I seem to feel better on the liquids as opposed to the pills. Is there any truth to this absorption theory, or is it just a myth? And secondly, can I mix my two supplements into the same travel container without affecting their potency?
It's a myth. It's a myth, and the guy who invented it, they were colloidal minerals and colloidal supplements. Mm-hmm. He made a gazillion dollars. Private jets, Cadillacs, limousines, places in Las Vegas and Hawaii. I actually don't know how much, but I know he made millions of dollars. Mm-hmm. And the answer is no. No, it's absorbed just as well in a pill. If you're going to get a pill, like a vitamin, you want it to say USP. It means it's certified by the U.S. Pharmacopoeia to actually absorb. If you're going to get a supplement such as glucosamine, mm-hmm. I recommend consumerlab.org or consumerlab.com, rather, either one of them, .com or .org. Consumerlab tests each supplement. You have to pay money to get in the lab. I think he does a great job, and that's what I would use because those are the supplements that I know work. So that's my recommendation. As you may know or may not know, supplements are not regulated by the FDA in the proper way, and therefore they may not contain what they say they contain. Buyer beware.
Have a myth you'd like Zorba to bust? Just send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or go through Facebook and don't forget I tweet.
Mm-hmm. Back to the phones now, Zorba. A listener with us in Jacksonville, Florida. Hi.
Yeah, hello. This is Zorba. My name is Merrick. I appreciate you taking my call.
Mm-hmm. How can we help?
Given a call, I've been suffering from really bad neck spasms for a couple of years now. And also a lot of pain in my rhomboids. And I've done a lot of things. I've had a fusion done in my neck. I've done physical therapy, and nothing just seems to help. And I take about 2,400 milligrams of ibuprofen a day for it, and I'm wondering if that can become a problem down the line, taking that much ibuprofen.
So you've had these surgeries over – you had one surgery, two surgeries?
I had one neck fusion, uh-huh. And I cannot remember the disc that they did.
Yeah, how come? Why they do the fusion? Did you have an accident?
Yeah, I have had a few accidents throughout uh-huh. my life. One in particular, I was a framer, uh-huh. and I was put in a truss up. And long story short, a truss splintered, went in through my eye. You know, I fell two stories, kind of landed. Wow. Arm and face first, and that was not a good one there. So
that was not a good one. Gee, you're lucky you're alive.
Exactly. Yeah. It was bad.
Yeah, I would imagine, and I would think that's sort of the basis of what's going on. You've had some very, you know, you've had that very significant injury. You're doing physical therapy, like you said. You're doing range of motion activities.
Yeah, I have. Mm-hmm. I haven't been doing it lately. For about the past 8 months,
mm-hmm.
and okay. it's just unfortunately health insurance for me is pretty expensive. So when I go to see a physical therapist, it's $50 a pop. So
well, that's expensive. You're doing the therapy yourself, correct?
Yes, I have.
Am I correct?
Okay. And one of the things that I noticed, and you know, I'm only 36 years old, but if I try to do let's just say some pull-ups, I'm probably going to end up at care spot or one of the care spots or the emergency room.
Oh, yeah. No. You don't want to do anything such as pull-ups because that can, you know, that's going to bother your neck. So let's talk about what you can do. I mean, there are some things you can do. First of all, anti-inflammatories. Ibuprofen over time is fine. 2,400 milligrams is the highest dose of ibuprofen. If you don't have stomach pain, you don't have discomfort, I have a number of people on it. Two Aleve tablets twice a day, which is close to 500 milligrams twice a day, probably work as well. Not as many pills to pop, and you only have to take it twice a day. There's a drug called gabapentin. Have you ever been on that?
No, sir.
Gabapentin. G-A-B-A, pentin, P-E-N-T-I-N. And gabapentin is a seizure medication that we give for chronic neuropathic pain. And it's an excellent, excellent drug. And so what I would recommend talking to your doctor, and try and gabapentin, I would start with 300 milligrams at bedtime, and then I would slowly increase to 300 milligrams three times a day. It makes you a little sleepy, so you got to do it. Your body adjusts to it. Eventually, the sleepiness goes away. And you can take up to 2,400 milligrams of that. And that helps a lot of people with neuropathic pain. And I'm going to make an assumption here that part of the spasm you had, because you're in your 30s, you fell two stories, you had a neck fusion, that your nerves are somehow affected. I mean, you know, and you don't need to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. You've had some trauma to your nerves. And if we can get the nerves to settle down, I think you're going to feel better. And we get it to settle down, among other things, not just anti-inflammatories, but these drugs we use for chronic pain. It is not a narcotic. It is not addictive. And I would recommend trying that out. And I'd go up to as many milligrams and see if it works. Sometimes it takes a month or two to kick in. So don't be surprised if it doesn't work in the first week. Do not give up. Give yourself some time. It's an excellent drug. It's a generic now. So it's much cheaper than when it was an A brand. And I would do that. Good luck. Let us know what happens. Okay.
Okay. Appreciate it. Thanks.
Thanks for your call.
Thanks so much for the call. Before we slip on out of here today, Zorba, time to let one of our listeners give us a piece of their mind in a segment we call Disagreeing with the Doc. Today's email comes from a listener, Virginia, from Concordia, Kansas. She writes, "Dear Zorba, on a recent show, you made a statement that kids under 30 don't wear slippers. I beg to differ. For about 15 years, I was an adjunct college instructor. I can assure you that not only does the under 30 college student wear slippers and the fuzzy type, but they wear their pajamas to class. You betcha."
It's true. You betcha. That is true. We are on the University of Wisconsin campus, and I do see people walking around pajamas. My mother would turn over in her grave if she knew that people went outside with pajamas. She would consider that to be the same as going outside in your nightgown.
Do you disagree with something Zorba said on the show? Just post it to our Facebook page or send us an email at
Zorba@WPR.org or post it through Facebook. And don't forget, I tweet at Dr. Zorba.
See you next week, Zorba.
Stay well, Tom.
If you missed anything during the show or just want to download our show podcast, visit us on the web
at ZorbaPastor.org. Or through Facebook.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget, you can call us anytime at 800-462-7413. Zorba Pastor on Your Health is a production of Wisconsin Public Radio. It's not intended as a medical diagnosis, so please do check with your doc. Our executive producer is Otis's dad, Carl Christensen. And by the way, if the show was sloppier than usual, you can blame Carl. He isn't getting any sleep.
That's right. It's his newborn.
Our technical director is Brad Kohlberg. Our theme music is by Leo and Ben Sidran. For Zorba Pastor, I'm Tom Clark, hoping you'll join us for the next Zorba Pastor on Your Health.
Copies of today's show are available through the radio store at 800-747-7444. Ask for program number 0425Z. More information on Zorba, his clinic, and healthy living, including heart-healthy recipes, podcasts, and show archives, is available online at ZorbaPastor.org.
PRI, Public Radio International.